The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. James Chernowski is a senior policy analyst at Technology and Innovation, at Americans for Prosperity. Also has a lot of experience working as a technology and innovation policy guy at the Libertas Institute and a program coordinator with the American Institute for Economic Research. Work featured in the New York Post, Newsweek, This Morning Consult, U.S. News and World Report, many more. By the way, it was The Morning Consult, not This Morning Consult, but one way or the other. James, it's great to have you back on because I want to talk about First Amendment speech protections. And political speech is probably the most important part of the First Amendment. We're in a political season right now, and yet everybody seems to want to crack down on political speech in one form or another, including Gavin Newsom, the governor of the state to the south of us, California. What's the story here this morning, huh? What do you say?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thanks for having me. I think that it's kind of crazy to think that Governor Newsom signed a bill that would go and require the disclosure of the use of AI in political and issue ads within the state of California, but then also enable legal action against people for, deceiving the appearance and candor and actions and speech and appearance of these political candidates in any kind of advertisements whatsoever. And again, just the way that it's being defined, the way that it's being presented to the public, it's so broad that, again, the consequences are pretty dire here. Political speech, as you mentioned, is a kind of a core part of the First Amendment, and Gavin Newsom seems to forget about that, right? So thankfully, there's already a lawsuit that's been filed to challenge the constitutionality of this law, and we expect that the courts will go and reaffirm that the First Amendment does apply here.
What are the three laws that that Newsom's, if you could kind of explain how they would work and where the danger is in some of these, because some of it could be a little bit confusing even to try to explain, but I figured you can do this. You know it. You know this upwards and downwards, okay?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, at the core of these legislative proposals is just, transparency for the use of AI in these kinds of elections related ads for political and issue ads. By extension, what the legislation would then go and do is create a legal action to go and take down that content and have that expectation on platforms to take down the content within a certain period of time. Otherwise, they could go and face, action from the California government as well, right? That's the crux of what this proposal is doing here. So it's saying, hey, if there's an advertisement that's been put out there that, someone claims is deceiving or misleading about the appearance, speech, or other kinds of related things around that, elected candidate, right, that they're spreading falsehoods about that person, that they could then go and take a legal action to the court to get that content, that political ad, taken down. And it would even cover, parody kinds of pieces of content. Like there was a parody ad that was done where AI-generated voice of Kamala Harris, just reading a script, was out there. But it was clearly labeled parody.
Yes.
And this law would still go and apply to something like that, too. Right. So it's not just covering political ads. It's not just covering issue ads, but it is implicating AI-generated content that would appear online in general, too, right? So it's a very censorious piece of legislation that the governor is signing into law here. And again, we don't think that it will go and withstand First Amendment scrutiny since it's been challenged.
James, one of the issues that I've had with something like this, and I've tried to explain this to people, even being a broadcaster, and, we will take political advertising, and people would say, well, what that person says is not true. And I would say that doesn't matter. And they don't quite understand that it's not my job as a broadcaster to correct what someone makes in what somebody claims in a political ad, that is for someone else to do. In fact, the rules are quite clear. If you take advertising like we would at KMED, you take it and, you just take it as is. There is no censoring of such. Do people realize that's really the way political speech was supposed to be done? In other words, you could technically lie in political speech and nobody can do anything about it. That's what the First Amendment was about here, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. As you kind of highlighted there, even lies are protected underneath the First Amendment of the Constitution. And, where there's been narrow carve-outs has been like, obviously, you can't lie about the date of an election or where you can go to vote around an election, right? That kind of stuff is not protected. But in terms of your speech, if you're just talking about issues or about a candidate, even lying is protected by the First Amendment. And again, you know, I don't think that you want to go and empower the government to be in a position to put its thumb on the scale here to determine what is truth, or worse yet, go and try to put it on the stations themselves to go and discern, is this truthful or not, under the threat of any kind of action from the government because they didn't take down a certain political advertisement because it had misinformation or something in there, right? So that's the kind of threat that's here, is that's being presented, right? It's that the government is trying to put its thumb on the scale to control what the discourse looks like out there. And really, it's very insulting to the voter, right? It's basically saying that we don't believe in your ability to go and find out for yourself more about the candidates, about what's true or what's not true, about what they're saying here, right? And I think that's highly insulting to the voter.
It is indeed, but yet it's almost an infantilization. But yet, I got to tell you, half the time when I'm looking at stuff online, and I imagine you're the same way too, that you'll see something which just punches your button too comfortably. You know, when you see something that's either written, whether it's a story that you don't realize is parody, somebody else posts it, even though it is a parody, but it fits your narrative, and you want to love it. And then that's when I start doubting myself even more, when I love something too much. You ever get that way because of how much fakiness goes on out there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Look, I think that's the whole thing about being human, right? It's that in the heat of the moment, right, sometimes we'll let our passions get the better of us, and we'll go and we'll post something, and it's not always the right thing or whatever. But it doesn't change the fact that, again, we are human, yes, but that also – The presumption there is that somehow that we're incapable of learning or growing from that teachable moment, right? Where it's like, ah, man, I fell for the parody thing. Let me go and be better about it.
We've all done that. I think everybody has done that. Everybody's done that at least once in their life if they're not human, or else they're not human, I think.
You know? Exactly, right? So it's a completely human thing to go and be wrong about something, and that's okay, and people are going to get it wrong sometimes. But even then, that's not a justification for the government to go and step in and try to control what the political climate looks like, especially because we know that the government will go and exert pressure to go and have content that might go and fit a preferred course of narrative as opposed to being a neutral arbiter, right? You got to let all speech kind of go out there, for better or worse, right? And you don't want to go and even create this perception that the government's putting its thumb on the scale, because then what you're actually doing is actually destructive to democracy, because all this effort around all this stuff is in the name of democracy. We're trying to protect democracy, protect people from misinformation that are trying to influence our elections. But what would be worse is if people lost faith in the very institutions that are charged with going and administering the democracy, that are responsible for protecting the citizenry, because they don't trust the government anymore, because they're seeing them go and do things that are violating their core fundamental civil liberties that are afforded underneath the Constitution. So it's really bad that the government thinks that it is even necessary to step in to do this to begin with.
I couldn't help but think about the urge that everybody is trying to fact check everybody else, and especially they'd love the government to fact check people. And I couldn't help but think about that ABC debate a few weeks ago with Kamala Harris and former President Trump, you know, dueling it out that night, and how the fact checks were coming one after another. And it's like almost as soon as they say, well, this has been debunked, you can almost take it to the bank that what President Trump was claiming was actually true. There are problems with Haitian immigrants in Springfield, Ohio, as an example. It's just that mainstream and the city doesn't want you to know about it, right? You know, that kind of stuff is going on, right?
Yeah, I think that the notion of people trying to go and put their thumb on the scale to try to, you know, influence what people are thinking about it is just bad. I think at the end of the day, the funny thing is that I think these candidates have done a better job of, painting a picture, or lack thereof in the case of one maybe, about what they stand for and what they're going to go and do. I think that that's a better kind of course. And we've kind of seen this actually nicely on Twitter, where even like the White House Twitter account gets a community note on it. And some research has shown that that's actually encouraged people to ultimately go and, you know, check some more sources and lean into it more and be less polarizing in terms of how they're engaging with content online. Right. So, again, I don't think that, you know, it's necessary for journalists to necessarily go as far as maybe as what we saw in the ABC debate. But again, it's a pressing issue. And I think that, you know, it just goes and undermines the faith in people. And for us, I think that it's important when we come from the position of we believe in people, we don't want to go and see things that ultimately go and undermine that and treat them like children.
Now, if you don't mind here, James, I'm going to play a little what if with you, a little bit of what if-ism. What if you ended up having artificial intelligence actually getting so sophisticated, and they can do this now, in which you could have a candidate being at an event saying something scandalous that did not happen, that did not happen. So it ends up being defamatory of sorts. It's very difficult to sue on stuff like that. How does something like that get taken care of in an election? You know, if you're going to say that Gavin Newsom's people shouldn't have the power to censor AI fakes within advertising.
Yeah, and I think that this is the important thing of recognizing that existing regulations kind of already exist in this space where, you know, candidates have to stand by their ads. So if somebody is going and saying something defamatory about another individual, you know, that's going to go and get affiliated to a PAC or to a campaign, right? And you can go and use the existing tort system to go and bring action against them for going and saying something like that. You know, that being said, you know, the other side of the equation, too, is that the private sector is already going and taking some action to deal with some of this issue, where Google and Meta and Microsoft, they're investing in a lot of money into research and development to go and detect AI-generated content that might be within a political ad and marking it as such. So that way we can go and inform voters when, you know, that kind of stuff is there. Or, you know, you might even go and see watermarking within AI-generated ads, more broadly speaking, right? So the technology is certainly getting better, right? And it will become increasingly difficult to tell what's AI versus what's, you know, real.
Oh, I agree. But, you know, my concern is that do I really want an openly hostile high-tech system censoring my political ads, though? I mean, do we want to turn it over to them, too? I don't exactly look at them as innocent actors in all this.
Well, I would say to that it's more about the reason why that even got as toxic as it did is because the government played such a big role in putting the thumb on the scale to these companies and pressuring them to go and take action on content, right? So really, this comes back to the nexus of the government and what it is doing to try to influence the climate that's out there in the digital ecosystem, more broadly speaking, right? So we have to go and do our part to work with Congress to make sure that we are actually reining in the government's ability to go and have this kind of I would say improper communication with these platforms to try to take down content. Because like when we think about Murphy v. Missouri, that was at SCOTUS this past term, that was at the core of the issue here, was that you had administration officials from the Biden White House going and pressuring these platforms. And there's plenty of emails that go and show really aggressive communication from them to these platforms. Mark Zuckerberg acknowledges much in a letter to the Judiciary Committee, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So again, for me, I don't think those companies wanted to be in the business of being the speech police. But the reason why they even got into that to begin with is because of the pressure from the government. So let's go and put our focus and our ire on the government to go and get them out of the business of being the speech police.
And that's more or less what you're saying in your Americans for Prosperity.org website. You have a comment up there today that I'm going to direct people so they can see the whole thing. And I appreciate you sharing a few thoughts. So one way or the other, as bad as some fakes can be out there, you really don't want the government weighing in and putting its thumb on what's fake and what's real, right? You just want to be clear on that. All right. James, thanks so much for having joined us this morning. And James Chernowski, Senior Policy Analyst in Technology and Innovation at Americans for Prosperity, will have you back. And I appreciate your time this morning. Be well. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
727 at KMED, and this is the Bill Myers Show.
One of each, Forte VIN 69674 MSRP 21645 Telluride VIN 551538 MSRP 42435 5958 due 10K miles per year, zero security deposit, all incentives and discounts to dealer plus tax, title license, 150 registration processing fee.
This is News Talk 1063 KMED, and you're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
7:30, we'll check news here in just a moment, and then State Senator and Secretary of State candidate Dennis Linthicum. Kind of curious what he thinks about the ever-rising number of foreign nationals that seem to be registered to vote in Oregon. And gee, he wants to be Secretary of State. Someone tells me he has a take on that. We'll kick that around. Wild Sam and Steve here right now. Good morning, Steve. What's on your mind?
Well, I read a book recently by Jonathan Turley, who's a Democrat attorney.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote a book called The Indispensable Right, Free Speech in the Age of Rage. And he goes back over the history of free speech and how this country developed what we now have as the laws in the with respect to speech. And the law really says that the cure for bad speech or sedition is more speech, not less speech.
Not to censor then the person who would otherwise be considered seditious, right? You think about the Alien and Sedition Act, that kind of thing?
Well, yeah, Yes, sedition is a term that came from history, basically, and it's one of the reasons why we exist as the United States to begin with, is because the King of England was terribly, they would put you in jail and torture you and maybe even kill you for saying bad things about the king. So they had a court of sedition, and you know, you got into that thing, you were in deep trouble, and the colonists, well, for one thing, we were across the ocean, so it was harder for the king to do anything about it.
We probably got a little uppity just because of distance, I would imagine.
Oh, absolutely. They kept trying, but the people here who had built their own lives, you know, in 100 years or so, did not like the king having these sedition laws and or spies all over the place.
Don't you find it interesting, though, that not too long after the formation of the federal government, you know, the United States, that they, you know, went that direction, the Alien and Sedition Acts, right?
Well, John Adams and believe it or not, who was the third president?
Jefferson.
Jefferson,
right?
Mm-hmm. They both had sedition laws.
Yeah.
And they both put people in jail for saying things against them.
Yeah, arguably more liberty-oriented people, but still, that's human nature, right? Human nature is not to want to confront the person who's criticizing you. Is there a way we could just shut them up, make them go away, huh?
Yeah, the Oliver Wendell Holmes thing about you can't yell fire in a crowded theater. His actual quote was, "You cannot falsely claim there was fire in a crowded theater. If you did that, you were subject to if people died, it was murder." You know, the cure is the responsibility for what you say,
mm-hmm.
ultimate. And so Oliver Wendell Holmes tried to find a way to make it such that you could punish people for bad speech, but there's no way to do that. That's what the Supreme Court has come down to, is if you want to have controls over speech, it ultimately ends up in the hands of people who abuse it.
Indeed. I wanted to ask you just an opinion on, you might talk about responsibility for false speech, you know, that kind of thing, and that being responsible for this. Do you think that what happened to Alex Jones, and I'm going to be the first person to say that I have never been a huge Alex Jones fan, all right, and I've been honest, you know, about that. We used to run him here, but I felt even then that there is, he played a little fast and loose with things at times, and it made me a bit uncomfortable, although if even 10% of what he talks about it was true, it was pretty interesting, you know. They're auctioning off now the what's left of InfoWars, and, you know, pretty much he's probably going to find some way to do his show online or maybe through personal accounts and things like that. But do you think that the system did well by Alex Jones as far as free speech, or did that go beyond, you know, I'm just trying to think, you know, billions of dollars for, you know, defaming dead people? I don't get that. I really never got that that lawsuit.
You know, the system is not fair. There's no point. There's no challenging that.
I mean, they wanted to shut him up. I mean, no doubt they wanted to shut him up, and he made it easy for them, you know?
Michael Flynn, the same thing happened to Michael Flynn. You know, the powers that be, the hidden powers that be, did not want Michael Flynn in the position that Trump was trying to put him, because he knew where the skeletons were buried. So you risk your what was it the framers of the Constitution said? I pledge my life, my fortune, and my
sacred honor.
Sacred honor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of where you go, and maybe you have to do that. I don't know. And our whole situation is, it seems like the world is just going crazy every which way you go. I mean, I drove up to Crater Lake with my wife yesterday because I think it's maybe the last time she'll be able to do it. And it was maybe a mistake, but we stopped at Becky's Cafe, and we're going to get some huckleberry pie. They usually have it in there.
Yeah.
And he said now that Becky's got bought out by some corporation, and that the Karuk tribe controls who can pick berries now.
Really?
Yes.
It's no longer Becky's?
It says Becky's on it, but it's Aramark or something. Their menu is awful. They don't have the things that's always been in there, so that's been destroyed. The campground, Farewell Bend, for whatever reason, they've gone through and decimated that thing. They cut everything down except for the bigger trees, and it's like a bomb went off in there.
Was this about trying to reduce the fire danger of the campground?
Either that or they don't want you to go camping. I don't know. There's no reason to go. It used to be a beautiful place that you could go camping and you could have your own little spot, maybe, if you could tuck back into the trees and the bushes and kind of listen to the creek. And well, now it's nothing. So.
Well, just between me and you and several thousand people, I never camp in the campgrounds. I always find little little jobs off of forest roads. Those are the ways I go camping. Just saying.
Yeah, and you could still do that, maybe.
Yeah, for now. Appreciate the call, Wild Salmon. Thanks for that. Let me grab another call, and we got to get Dennis Linthicum in here. I got to talk to him about those foreign nationals on the voter rolls. Hi, who's this? Good morning. Welcome. Hello?
Yeah, Ron Granchpath.
Hey, Ron, go ahead.
Real quick, I have a perfect use for AI.
Okay.
Our problems today with the freedom of speech and other freedoms are being violated is that there's no punishment, and that the so-called oath of office was the only guideline. Now,
yeah, except that it's not self-enforcing.
Wait,
all right?
Let me finish. AI can be used to bring in the documentation like the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Federalist Papers, and all of the history that our founding fathers used as a basis for our freedoms. And use that as a reflecting board so that if somebody said something, it was libelous or seditious or something of that nature, that the AI would say, you have violated the the amendment of the Constitution, and you will be liable to and subject to lawful.
Okay, so put the AI in charge of determining your guilt or innocence. All right, something.
No. Just to determine that the rights of the person who has been violated.
Have been violated. Okay, but still, that is part of it, though. So here it is, Ron. I'm just going to just take it. I watched a lot of science fiction when I was growing up, and I can't help but think that going down that road ultimately has the AI determining that you have said the wrong thing and offended the wrong people who've been liable. Show up for your electronic execution, okay?
No. That's not a court. They are not a court. They're simply
not right now.
No. Wait. We're not going that far. If you let it go that far, certainly what you say is true.
But government would never take it. But government would never take it that far, right? But
you always come back to me with that same argument that the government's going to be this entity I proposed is going to be corrupted.
Ron, love you. You're insane if you think that the government that has gone as corrupt as it has at this point would not take the AI and make it just as corrupt.
Well, pretty soon we're going to be going into 1,000 years of darkness if we keep going slice by slice of the salami down the crap hole.
Yeah, but the AI will not save you from that.
But the AI may give people who have violated, have the rights violated, a chance to say, well, now, according to the rule of AI, you have violated my rights. I can take you to court and sue you.
Oh, okay, you don't need AI to do that.
But today's courts are stinky.
Okay, how is AI going to make today's courts that would be learning from today's courts any less stinky?
Because the courts would be subject to the same AI.
Okay, I'm really confused on this one. I'm going to have to roll it around and consider that. But I don't know, Joe. I don't know, Ron. But thank you for the call, okay? It's 20 before 8. Because remember, everything that humans are right now is being used to train AI. Humans are flawed, so AI is being trained with the same flawed information, garbage in, garbage out, if you're going to. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about it.
Looking forward to hunting season? Good Guys Guns.
With SRN News, I'm Rich Thompson.
State Senator Dennis Linthicum running for Secretary of State. SOS, save the state. Save our state. I think you could you even put that on your sign here, Dennis. Welcome back. Always good having you on. Welcome.
Very good, Bill. It's good to be on. It sounds like you've been having a fun morning here on KMAD Radio, so I'm glad to join you.
Well, we do our best. A little bit spirited here. I wanted to ask you, though, I know that you came out against all five of the state ballot measures, and I agree with you, but I especially have special hatred for Measure 115, and that's the one about the, I think that's the one about impeachment, state impeachment, and Measure 117, which is ranked choice voting, right?
Correct.
And what I'm trying to figure out, though, is did you know that the Oregon Republican Party is going neutral on the impeachment one? Did you know that? Were you aware of that?
Yeah, of course, people ask me what my opinion was, and I described to them, if we keep thinking along the lines of people are good and people are glorious and our democracy works, we wouldn't be having trouble. Nobody would be requesting a Article 5 convention or anything because we would be following constitutional rules. But when the Constitution and precedent get so damaged that the accountability of an impeachment becomes watered down to the point it's irrelevant, it's like we had Mayorkas and attempted impeachment for him. We had Trump get impeached. These were political-oriented weapons. They were PR games. The House at the federal level set up this big charade, and it was live TV, and they did the whole thing. There was no defense. There was no meeting the opposition, on the Trump side. The same for Mayorkas. They brought him in, and he sat there at the microphone and said exactly what they were doing, and nobody, had the guts to, quote, impeach him, even though he's clearly let 20 million mm-hmm. illegals in the United States, and now they're registering to vote across the states. So I don't think impeachment actually works in our watered-down, weak world. We need to go back to the strength of the Constitution and principles that are eternal principles.
Now, that's great. Now, here's the issue that I had with this is that essentially when you have a corrupt state of Oregon with single-party rule, practically single-party rule, Democrats don't have supermajority status, but they're pretty darn close to it. They've had it before. And when you're talking about a two-thirds vote of the state would end up making this happen, this means that Democrats would be impeaching mostly Republicans. You would never have Democrats being impeached because of the Democrats, generally speaking, because it's all politics. Where am I wrong about that when you look at the way it's really playing out?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Right now, we are only a couple of seats in both chambers. We're only a couple of seats from two-thirds, one-third, Democrats to Republicans. So right now, we're at the brink of what you're describing, where there would be this massive onslaught. For example, if Will Lathrop were elected to Attorney General, Brian Boquist to Treasurer, and myself to Secretary of State's office, before we even got sworn in, there would be strategies on how to impeach us. I can guarantee it.
Absolutely. No doubt. And I just don't understand why the Oregon Republican Party would be so dim-bulbed to not figure out this and think of things realistically. It's almost like there are still a bunch of Republicans that are thinking, America's working just fine, and if we just win a few elections here and there, we're going to be able to fix it. And the rot's pretty deep at this point in the state of Oregon. Would you agree with me? I mean, that's just
I think that's really it's really hard to get. Once you're on this train, that your previous caller said, once you start slicing the salami this thin or something, we're never going to see the end of it. And that's really the problem. The people who have been enriched by the deep state, both here in Oregon as well as at the federal level, there is trillions and trillions of dollars being laundered around to all the favored you know, industries, to the favored people, to those well-connected, et cetera. And as soon as you have that much power, it's really hard to say, wait, time. We're not supposed to be bringing home the bacon to Medford or Klamath Falls or to, you know, Independence, Oregon. We're supposed to be protecting the bacon of all those taxpayers out there.
I know. But that's the way I swear that people are just saying, well, my only job here is to get the Grant Stream funding, you know, into Grants Pass or into Medford or into Ashland. Or, well, I mean, you see the same thing coming out of, you have Merkley and Wyden that are so proud because they have $1.8 million coming in to help stimulate manufacturing in the state of Oregon. $1.8 million is a rounding error, you know. That's the cost of one crap shack above the boulevard in Ashland, okay, for crying out loud. That's really going to stimulate manufacturing, right, Dennis? My goodness.
Well, right. Well, even the $500 million that was part of the CHIPS Act, you know, the other night I was watching the Five on Fox News, and the liberal gal who's there talking, Jessica, whatever her name is, she says, oh, but what about the Inflation Reduction Act and the CHIPS Act and the money that is increasing the employment in microcircuit and semiconductor manufacturing here in the U.S.? And the point is, in Oregon, as soon as somebody says, we'll take all of your tax dollar money, or actually deficit, and we'll spend that building a brand new multi-layer fabrication facility. And as soon as that happens, now you've got a footprint on the ground, but you can't compete with the wages. You can't compete with the fair wage. You can't compete with the labor requirements. You can't give everybody 2 years off because they're
just building the factory and getting it there doesn't take care of the rest of the regulatory state and overhang, which is weighing in on it, right.
And you know, when everybody in the family gets 2 years off because a distant cousin had a baby, I mean, it's really hard to become profitable in that kind of environment. Or actually, you can become profitable because there's grant money coming in, but you can't compete in the market.
And that's a very good point. But you know, we don't think critically enough when we see this stuff. You know, the news releases come out like, ooh, here's another Grant Stream funding coming up, happy days are here again, right? You know, that's we should be upset every time that our cities and our counties are taking the grants, because I know everybody says, well, someone else will get it. I get that. But it ends up becoming part of the problem when we live for grants instead of actually protecting our rights and trying to, you know, grow organically, as it were. I'm not speaking of organic farming, although that's certainly nice. But all right, let me set that aside here. By the way, you know, when people are arguing against these situations, you need to talk with your friend E. Warner Reschke. You know E. Warner over in Klamath Falls, right?
Yes, I did.
Okay. He was on NBC5, I think it was last night, and they were talking about the ranked choice voting, which, of course, is evil. The Democrats want it, which is why, you know, they're pushing it, referring it there. And the argument that he was using was that the ballots would become too long. That's a bad argument, okay? Could you talk to him about that saying? It's too complex. It's too complex. It's so complex, nobody can explain how ranked choice... The people who want ranked choice voting can't explain how it works, you know?
Well, and actually, it's unconstitutional within Oregon, because within Oregon, it says the ballots have to be tallied by precinct. So at the precinct level, you can't make sense of who's the victim in this precinct.
You have no idea. There's no way you can tell.
You can't have all choices. Have you seen the ballot from Alaska? The ballot from Alaska has eight choices. So there's eight columns by, you know, it's a big sheet of paper, eight columns across and eight rows down, and you're supposed to put your little circle in the right dot. Nobody is ever going to fill that out correctly or appropriately.
Yeah, the simple way of talking about ranked choice voting is that it is so complex. It makes it absolutely you can't understand how the election works. Nobody can understand how. It might take weeks to figure out who actually wins it. and you can't follow the law in Oregon. So it just has to be a solid no on this, okay? All right? But don't talk about being the ballot being too long. I think that's a that's a weak argument, okay?
All right? Well, yeah, and I think, unfortunately, Republicans fall for the we're going to hold them accountable mantra. Like, we don't want to waste money on ballot paper. But that's a fake issue. We keep jumping into the efficiency track. And that's what happened when, we would hold senators accountable. They couldn't deny a quorum for more than 10 days. And yet they were actually being held accountable to their constituencies. And it's not the state legislature. It's not the Senate president's job to hold them accountable. It's their voters who hold them accountable. And so they were doing what they were told to do. They were told to stop this law dead in its tracks. And they made a good attempt at doing that. But Republicans voted to put Measure 113 into effect and create the constitutional amendment that threw us out of office. That's because we fell for the we're going to hold accountability.
Fell for that weak argument. It was very poorly done. And, of course, the Oregon Republican Party said nothing against it, too. That would just happen to I can't help but pick that scab. All right, Dennis. Hey, before we take off, I want to make sure and hit this one, though. We have the situation with more than 1,300 more. Well, actually, can you hang on just a minute for just a quick break here? Just a moment.
You bet.
I got someone at the front door, and so I'll answer the front door. But I'll be right back with you. Then I'll ask you about the 1,300. Okay.
Go get him.
All right. Dennis Linthicum returns.
Hi, this is Dwayne Barkley, owner at American Rentier Garage, a full-service auto repair shop. We get numerous questions that begin with, hey, do you work on? So to put it simply, if it's between your license plates, we probably work on that. Call, stop by, or text us through our website at AmericanRentier.com. Stop by Biddle Road, right across the street from Elmer's, or call us at 541-499-6673. American Rentier Garage, we are united through service.
Chef salad so fresh and colorful, Diner 62's been known to warn diners of euphoric sensory overload.
One of each, Forte VIN 69674 MSRP 21645 Telluride VIN 551538 MSRP 42435 5958 due 10K miles per year, zero security deposit, all incentives and discounts to dealer plus tax, title license, 150 registration processing fee. Trading in a vehicle will not eliminate your debt. Negative equity applied to new loan balance ends 9/30/24.
Now is the perfect time to trade in and take off in a new Kia at Kia Medford. Trade in your old vehicle and get cash on the spot. Then shop our huge selection of brand new Kias. Take off in a new 2024 Kia Forte LXS, just $139 a month lease. Or a new 2024 Kia Telluride S all-wheel drive, only $229 a month lease. Plus, once we make a deal at Kia Medford, we'll pay off your trade no matter how much you owe. Need credit? Go to KiaMedford.com to get pre-approved in less than 30 seconds with no effect on your credit score. Don't miss Fortes, $139 a month, or Tellurides, $229 a month. Trade in and take off at Kia Medford. Click KiaMedford.com.
The Bill Myers Show is on News Talk 106.3 KMED.
8 o'clock KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point Medford, and 99.3 KBXG Grants Pass. This is the Bill Myers Show, and Dennis Linthicum, of course, running for Secretary of State. ElectDennis.com. Dennis, before we take off, probably should have started with this one, but hey, we'll end with the good stuff here. And do you think we'll ever really know how many foreign nationals have been registered to vote in the state of Oregon? They admitted to about 300 at first, and now we're up to about 1,300. And I don't know, is this a real audit? Did they run everything through E-Verify to make sure everyone's a citizen? Or is this just kind of a limited hangout like we were mentioning before? Is that changing at all? What say you?
I don't think so. The limited hangout is CIA spy jargon for it. We'll let a little bit of the bad news out, but we won't tell everybody all the details. And that's what they started with, 306. Oh, we caught 306. We have such a fine-tooth comb, we could pick a nit out of your head.
Right.
And in truth, now it's four times that. Well, is it going to go four times that next week also? And then if you start raising questions like that, you'll be criticized for lessening the faith in our, quote, democracy. And yet what's highlighted in the news reports, and as people read this, think about it, they highlight passports because they require the passport number, and they can tell that's a foreign national passport. They highlight driver's license because they actually have a driver's license that they could review, and they can see that it's a driver's license from Guadalajara. Now, that's source documentation that they can review. The third way of registering to vote is with four digits, only four, of your Social Security number. There is no way to review the four digits of the Social Security number without doing an actual police investigation. May I see your Social Security number? I wasn't willing to ask for it on the first day you registered, but I'm willing to circle around and ask you for it today. I don't think so. And so what they have is this is a limited hangout. They're letting the news out about driver's license and passports. They're not even hinting at how many false Social Security numbers have been scammed into the system.
Okay, so this is limited, and we're not being told the whole truth, and the system doesn't really want us to look too deeply in this. What could you, as a new Secretary of State, since you would be in charge of the interpretation and running of the elections and the rules that everybody would have to follow, could you fix any of that?
Well, you can certainly fix it by those source documents that we have. You can review those source documents, and then the legislature needs to fix the other one. It's by law, quote unquote. The Democrat majority put this into law so that it's enforceable. And the enforcement mechanism there is there's only the last four digits of your valid Social Security. Remember, and you probably don't recall these details, but originally it was the last four digits of a valid Social Security number. And we made them change it to an individual, the person's valid Social Security number. So originally, they didn't even want it tied to a person. They wanted it just to be some nefarious they out there, a valid. So we could all be using President Truman's Social Security number.
Yeah, because that would have been a Social Security number, but it wasn't yours. But, well, you didn't say you couldn't use, that you had to use yours, right? That kind of thing.
Right.
So, yeah, well, the way laws and rules are written are very important, then, is what you're saying. The details matter.
Yeah. Okay. And this is the perfect opportunity to hold the Democrat majority accountable. Up and down your ballot, the Democrat majority has to be held accountable. If they voted for House Bill 4133, you can look it up. If they voted for it, I think not a single Republican Senate caucus member voted in favor of that bill. And you can look it up, and if they voted in favor of that bill, throw them out of office.
All right. ElectDennis.com. Find out more. Dennis, we'll have you back as always. Always appreciate the take on it. Be well, and try to stay sane in a crazy world, okay? You be
Thank
well.
Thank you.
All right. 4 minutes after 8, we'll catch up with Town Hall News in just a moment. And good news over at Rogue Community College. We'll talk with the president, Dr. Randy Weber. He's making the rounds here in town.
When you call Fontana Roofing.